Thank you. Thank you and welcome to Jubilant FoodWorks Q3 and 9 months FY19 earnings conference call for analysts and investors. We will be joined today by Mr. Hari Bhartia, co-chairman of Jubilant FoodWorks, Mr. Prateek Pota, CEO, and Mr. Prakash Bist, CFO. We propose to commence with perspectives from Mr. Bhartia. Thereafter, we'll have Mr. Prateek Pota sharing his views on the progress that we have made operation-wise, the strategic imperatives that lie ahead, and the outlook for JFL. After the opening remarks from the management, the forum will be open for question and answer session. A cautionary note, certain statements that may be made on today's conference call could be forward-looking statements, and the actual results may vary significantly from these statements. A detailed statement in this regard is available in Jubilant FoodWorks Q3 and 9 months, results release and earnings presentation, which are both available on the company website under the investors section. I would now like to invite Mr. Bhartia to share his perspectives with you. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the quarter 3 and 9 month FY19 earnings conference call. I am pleased to share that we have again delivered strong performance during the quarter, led by our efforts on executing the growth strategy that we have outlined last year. As all of you know, the Indian food services industry continues to evolve, and there is a clear positive momentum in the category. Reduction of GST has also played a role in driving affordability, and now the convenience in ordering outside food is changing the demand landscape. We are aware of the changing consumer behaviors, and we keep adopting our business in response. While our focus remains on implementing the 5-pillar growth strategy that we have outlined before, we keep on shaping new programs and initiatives around these. On new product and innovation, we have enhanced our portfolio by adding choice of multigrain crust to our menu and 4 new side items. On digital and technology, we have added few features to our app and have fully revamped PWA, that is our mobile site. We remain committed to technology involving use of analytics, AI, and machine learning to give all new experience to our customers. On the cost side, especially the manpower cost, we continue to maintain sharp focus and drive operating efficiencies. Coming to Dunkin', I'm happy to share that we have attained break-even in Dunkin' Donuts during the quarter, and this stands ahead of our stated guidance of quarter 4 FY19. We had accelerated our store openings at the start of this year, and I'm happy to state that we have opened 35 stores in quarter 3. More than 50% of our new stores have been opened in the existing areas where we have split the existing stores. We believe this will improve customer service to our customers in the existing markets, improve efficiency in the long run, but also we believe in the short run, this will put pressure on the same store sales growth. Overall, we are pleased that with the quarter 3 performance, we remain confident about driving profitable growth in the future. With that, I would now like to call upon our CEO, Mr. Prateek Pota, to cover the operational highlights during the quarter.
Thank you, Mr. Bhartia, and good afternoon to all of you on the call today.
Let me cover the highlights of the Q3 performance. Operating revenues during Q3 were at rupees 9291 million, an increase of 16.8% over last year. This was driven by strong same-store sales growth of 14.6% in Domino's, lapping a strong quarter from last year. EBITDA during the quarter was rupees 1706 million at 18.4% of revenue, up by 24.6% over last year. A combination of strong SSG, focus on cost management and operating leverage has helped in driving the EBITDA growth and margins. Profit after tax stood at rupees 965 million at 10.4% of revenue, a growth of 46.2% over the last year, and with a margin expansion of 210 basis points. During the third quarter, we opened 35 new restaurants for Domino's Pizza and closed two, thus taking our restaurant count to 1,200 stores across 271 cities. The new store addition was the highest in 11 quarters. We entered two new cities during the quarter. In Dunkin' Donuts, the total store count is 32 restaurants across 10 cities, which remained unchanged from the previous quarter. In Domino's, we carried forward the growth momentum from earlier, and our order growth and delivery segment remained strong. All new Domino's and Everyday Value continue to be important levers for driving growth. In line with the strategy of driving innovation, we introduced a new multi-grain crust last quarter. In addition, we also launched four new sides: potato cheese shorts, crunchy strips, crinkle fries, and brownie fantasy. During the quarter, we announced PepsiCo as a new beverage partner for Domino's Pizza. The partnership, we believe, will bring in fresh focus on a beverage portfolio and also enhance the experience for our customers. A significant initiative during the quarter was the implementation of GPS rider tracking across all our stores and all our riders. This allowed us to use the data generated to improve our delivery efficiency during the quarter, and this would be an area of focus in the future as well. Our digital strategy is working well, and we strengthened the Domino's app in the quarter through the introduction of features such as advanced ordering, order tracking, train ordering, and an improved payments interface. We optimized the size of the app, which now stands at a very lean 5.6 MB. We also upgraded and rolled out a new progressive web app. Online sales grew strongly and stood at 73% of delivery sales in quarter three. Dunkin' Donuts reported strong top-line growth driven by a focus on donuts, beverages, and profitable food. This, along with a sharp focus on costs and driving efficiencies, resulted in the business reaching break-even a quarter ahead of target. Overall, we are satisfied with the Q3 performance and remain confident about driving profitable growth in the future. With that, I would request the moderator to open the forum for questions and answers.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question-answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Requesting each participant to please limit your question to two per participant. If time permits, you may come back for a follow-up. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We take the first question from the line of Aditya Soman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. A couple of questions from my end. Firstly, can you elaborate on the reasons for the expansion in the gross margins, especially when you had some sort of promotional activity towards the end of the quarter? And the second question is, we also saw an depreciation being down sequentially despite a significant increase in the number of stores. What's the reason for that?
So let me first take the depreciation question. So when we close the stores, At that time, we accelerate the depreciation. So when you see the last year's number and the previous quarter's number, during those quarters, last year we had opened 10 stores in the same period. So that included accelerated depreciation. Same was the case with the last quarter. And this quarter, since we did not close the stores, therefore you have a lower number. So that was the part one. The second, you have asked about the overall gross margin improvement. So our raw material cost has shown an improvement over the last quarter as well as the previous year. This was possible mainly due to two or three reasons. One was that the commodity cycles were soft, so we have a favorable dairy product. In addition to that, as Prateek explained, we had done a beverage contract that has also contributed to the lower raw material cost. And we had a better product mix, which has also contributed to the lower raw material cost. So these were the major reasons which has resulted in a better gross margin.
Understand. Just following up there, in terms of the new contract with Pepsi, so does this mean that the per unit cost is lower, or was there a sort of one-time inflow that we saw in the quarter?
Aditya, the beverage partnership that we have with PepsiCo is for 5 years. It includes sparkling drinks, juice drinks, and iced tea. The margins that we have as part of the contract, we see a favorable margin at the gross level, as also we see improved marketing support.
Understand. That's very useful. I'll come back in the queue for more questions.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Abneesh Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks and congrats on a good show. My question is on Dunkin' Donuts. So what has led to one quarter ahead break-even? Does this change your store expansion plan in any way? And because of the festive and because of the overall food tech apps being very aggressive, does this lead support to your own both Dunkin' business and Domino's business from a food delivery because culture gets more ingrained?
So, Abneesh, let me respond to the first part of your question as to what drove the Dunkin' break-even in quarter three. I think the first point which I referred to in my opening remarks, we had a strong same-store growth in Dunkin', strong top-line growth, driven by the core portfolio of donuts and of beverages. We drove a fair amount of innovation in the quarter. Two innovations that I want to call out which have been doing well for us. One of them is the launch of tea, which is doing well for us. And we had some simple food launched in stores, which again drove growth for us. Premiumization is something we drove both in the donuts portfolio as also on the food side. That has helped us drive realization. Accompanied by a very, very healthy increase in delivery in Dunkin', we realized that the brand strength that we have wasn't being fully leveraged given our footprint, and we used, therefore, delivery to drive growth. So that delivery channel growth also has helped us. And I think the point we made about getting very, very sharp focus on costs in Dunkin', operating costs in terms of manpower, in terms of energy, and then optimizing G&A as well. So all of these have led to Dunkin' breaking even in quarter three. To your second part of your question, I think it would be fair to say that this is only the first milestone. We were loss-making, and this was the first port of call for us to break even, which we've achieved now. We intend to watch the business closely before we take a call on expansion or the pace thereof.
But from 77 stores, you're down to 32 and now stable at 32 for two quarters. When do you start thinking of expansion? Second is, when do you start thinking of sharing numbers? Because now at least you have positive margins, but your number of stores is half. So that means, again, in terms of revenue, it's not a great number. So do we ever see in the foreseeable future numbers being shared on Dunkin'?
So, Abneesh, the first part, I mean, the answer remains the same, that it is a, we intend to take some more time and give ourselves more time to decide how to recalibrate the Dunkin' expansion and the pace of that. On sharing of the numbers, there is no plan as of now to provide more visibility on the Dunkin' numbers.
But you are sharing margin impact. So at the positive, is it just break-even or there is more to it?
So we should be broke-even in the quarter.
Okay.
EBITDA break-even, absolutely.
Yeah, one follow-up on Dunkin' was in terms of the delivery. Is it double digits as a percentage of revenue? At least that can you share?
I'm afraid I won't share numbers, Abneesh. It was a significant investment and growth driver for us. I wouldn't want to share numbers because we don't do that. But it was one of the growth drivers for us in Dunkin'.
My second and last question is on the EBITDA margin. 7-year high is a good thing. But now store expansion is again coming back at a very strong number. In the past, we have seen when store expansion picks up, margins could be lower because of obviously lower margins in new stores. Second, of course, what's the comment on price hike? Last time you said you want to delay it because of the food tech app's intensity. Plus, inflation is happening in wheat and milk going ahead. So in all this context, will EBITDA margins come under pressure?
So, Amish, two, three questions into one. Let me talk about the first part of your question on store expansion. As Mr. Bhatia said in his opening remarks, a significant part of the stores that we opened in the last quarter were splits of existing stores. However, the good news in that is that we are seeing strong momentum in both the stores that we split and indeed in the new stores. So we have seen in the store splits done recently that the mother store, the split store, returns to its original revenue trajectory in about 12 months or a little less than that. And both the stores together, of course, give a significant incrementality. That's number one. Number two, we see a significant jump in operations KPIs in terms of delivery time taken to customers, the customer service levels, which translates into improved customer satisfaction scores. So that's the entire piece about store expansion and how that's impacting our margins.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to the participants. Please limit your question to two per participant. Next question is from the line of Amit Sachdeva from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for my question and congratulations on good set of numbers. So Pratik, my question is that, when we talk about 35 new stores, 50 being in existing locations, as Mr. Bharti also pointed out, that potentially it may put pressure on SSG as you pursue the same strategy in the coming quarters as well. So my question is that whether this quarter, when you opened 35 new stores and close two, does this quarter has that pressure on SSG, some of it already built in, and if yes, how much is the sort of, I would say, in reported SSG basis, how much would that number be? If you say reported is, 14.6, then maybe it could have been 17, but it's 14.6 because of that. Some indication of that would be very helpful.
So, Manish, I think the first and the most important one to recognize is that the pressure on same-store growth is in the short term. The point I made a little earlier in my earlier response, with the mother store, we see recovering fairly quickly. So we don't see the pressure on same-store growth being sustained for long. That's number one. Number two, during the quarter gone by, our store opening was fairly well dispersed across the quarter. And you see the impact of that translating into our system growth, into our same-store growth. Beyond that, it would be difficult to dissect and say how the numbers would pan up without that. But I think the momentum is strong, and we are seeing incrementality emerge in the stores put together.
And more than that, what I'd like to just add what Pratik said, we only split the store when we realized the store volumes are reaching at the peak level, and the service level starts going down, because what happens is the volume increases so much that it could lead to delay in delivering pizza or lower service levels. So then when we split the stores, as Pratik said, the existing store comes back to the same level within 1 year, and then we add another productive store and also improve customer service. So that is why we prioritize wherever we have to split the stores in the existing markets, because it's very important to keep our service levels at a very high level. So that is why I said at the short term, it definitely puts pressure on the same store growth, but we achieve overall store growth and improve customer service and improve efficiency.
Sure. That's very, very helpful, Mr. Bhatti. But I sense from Pratik's answer as well that it has very little effect on your margins overall, if I can safely conclude that.
You can conclude that, yes.
Okay. My second question very quickly is that if you look at last 8-10 quarters, Pratik, last 4 quarters we've seen, other expenses, if I may take as a, per store basis, it has actually been growing at more than 20%, almost last 3 quarters, now is 17. And previous 4 quarters were actually flattish. What is really going on in the other expenses line, which is growing so rapidly while, employee cost has risen for the obvious reasons, but what is that driving that strong double digit when you have a strong cost cutting program, and what head is actually driving that such large number, YOY expansion?
So there are 3 or 4 drivers that we see impacting our manufacturing and other expenses cost line. The first one, as you can imagine, is the increase on account of just the volume growth and the volume expansion. I mentioned in my remarks that we've had a lot of the growth coming through orders, and that obviously has a cascading impact on volume-linked cost increase. That's the first point. The second point is that we are seeing some inflation in some of these cost lines. The third part is loss on account of, and this is more vis-a-vis same time last year and earlier, loss on account of loss of input credit, which again has put some pressure on these costs. And the fourth point is a very specific investment we are making in brand marketing and in advertising. And you saw it play out through this year, for example, in quarter one when we invested behind IPL and we drove investments behind that. So this is a very, very specific investment we are making to strengthen the brand as we grow.
Thank you. While requesting Ms. Amit Sachdeva to please rejoin the question queue for your follow-up, we take the next question from the line of Vishal Kutka from PhillipCapital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. And also for delivering pizza at to Armed Forces at Siachen Glacier. Sir, I have 2 questions. First question is on railway platform. So, sir, if you just can comment qualitatively, what are you seeing on that front? And what are the challenges you are facing with regards to scaling up the growth for railway platform? And second question is on the Pepsi. Is it possible for us to install fountain or vending machines at dining in restaurant of Domino's?
So, Vishal, thank you. To answer the first part of the question, we are very, very encouraged by the response that we see to our railway ordering functionality. As you can imagine, it is a logistically a complex exercise to provide the pizza customer in the train, given sometimes the fickle nature of train timing. But I think the operations team has done a really good job in ensuring that we deliver the pizza to the customers. The response has been very, very positive. I would say unambiguously positive. And that has led to a significant increase in both the railway orders and therefore the revenue. Our customer satisfaction scores in train ordering are very strong. This is something that we intend to invest behind and to grow. Part of it is as awareness grows, part of it is as habit builds, but this we see as continuing to grow in the future. To respond to your second part of the question, putting in fountain machines is very much an integral part of our beverage transition plan. And you will see the leading stores, the large stores in the metros, which have the sufficient scale, deploying fountain machines pretty much starting this quarter.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Amit Sinha from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is on your gross margin expansion, which has happened in this quarter. But going forward, do you see commodity inflation kind of impacting the gross margin on a sequential basis?
So,
So, Amit, we answered at the beginning of the call about the gross margin. So, we actually explained that the reasons why raw material cost was lower, and one of them was obviously the softer commodity margin. But having said that, we have various programs running which would ensure that we would get the best of the raw material prices, because we do always are trying to expand our supplier base. We are also trying to go nearer to the, we are geographically also expanding, which improves our logistic costs. So all those initiatives are there in place to take care of the future cost increases which may come into this line item. At the same time, we also drive efficiencies by reduction of wastage, whether it is in our stores or whether it is in our commissary. So all those cost efficiency parameters are there. At the same time, we are also doing parallelly our efforts with the suppliers. So these are our efforts which will, through which we hope that we will keep this line item under control.
Just to add to that, Amit, we talked about three things as the reasons for gross margin expansion. One was the benign environment of in dairy cost. Number two was mix improvement. The third was the beverage impact. Even if there's some cost pressure on the commodity line going forward, the other variables are available to us to make sure we contain the impact of that inflation.
Very helpful, sir. Secondly, on the new store addition, are you giving any new target for FY19 and any run rate for the next year?
So we don't have a target number out there. I think we are encouraged by the performance of the stores that we've opened so far this year. We are excited that the prospects that we and the potential that we see ahead, both in existing markets and in green areas where we don't have presence right now. So we will be investing in store expansion. I'm not going to give you a number right now. It will be an area of focus for us going forward.
Sure, but this quarter run rate is clearly on the higher side. That is all I wanted to know.
It is the highest, as we said, in 11 quarters, yes.
Oh, okay. Thanks a lot. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Abhi Mehta from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. I just wanted to understand your comment on the demand environment. Has there been any change in the? Has there been any increase in competitive pressures which has forced us to consider offers again to customers? Or is this more? What has driven this change? That was the only bit from my end.
Avi, I'm not clear what change you're referring to.
We've started giving, earlier we had said that, BOGO was off, and we said that we would not have these one-off offers, of 20, giving discount codes to customers, and EDV would be the key platform. But I see that we've now kind of started offering some of these discounts back to customers on selective dates, whether it's a weekday or so. So I just wanted to understand the reason for the same. Was it competition? Yeah. Was it, what was that? That was it.
Okay, Avi. Thanks for clarifying. So let me step back and reaffirm what we have been saying in the last few calls. Our strategy remains to focus on delivering fundamental, everyday, consistent value to our consumers. And therefore, EDV will remain the focus of all our investment and all our efforts as far as value for money is concerned. Discounts that you may have seen in the last quarter would have been tactical choices made by the team, either for specific customer cohorts, maybe lapsed customers whose frequencies had dropped. So very targeted discounts being given to customers, or indeed to drive up sales on specific big days. But very, 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 very tactical objectives. That may come and go, but the strategic theme will remain of driving everyday value. And I think Mr. Bharti also called out the fact that we see demand environment being robust. So, and that's reflecting in our same store growth that we delivered last quarter. So It wasn't a sales or a number pressure that led to discounting. These are tactical things that the teams do once in a while. The strategic pillar of value for money as delivered through EDV will remain relevant and will remain in play going forward.
Okay, perfect. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Manish Podal from Reliance. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Could you probably elaborate, let's say, the SSG numbers, let's say, how was it for October, November, and December? Because, you know, this taxation change happened in the base. So, you know, I'm just trying to understand how are the numbers, let's say, in the month of December, which are normalized numbers.
Yeah, Manish. Thank you for the question. Unfortunately, as you're aware, we do not give a month-wise dissection of same-store sales growth or indeed of any of our numbers, you know, intra-quarter. The number that you see is a number that we delivered through the quarter of 14.6% SSG. It was delivered on the back of strong growth in orders, strong performance of delivery channel, strong performance of online ordering channel, a focus on core pizza. Basically, the five pillar strategies that we unveiled last year, those pillars remain the growth drivers for us. Beyond that, we won't be able to dissect the numbers and give you a disaggregated number of growth by month.
Okay, and just one more bit. Let's say if I look at, you know, Domino's in this FY9, FY11 period, you know, that time you were somewhere adding the 60 to 80 stores which you are adding this year, you know, and going ahead, I believe, for the next 12 to 18 months at least. So that time your margins, you know, EBITDA was somewhere in that 17.5% range which you are currently clocking. And, you know, there's not material difference between your gross margins and it's primarily the other expenses and the employee cost which are generally offsetting. Are there any other levers which you believe are there, you know, to aid margins going ahead? Or should we believe this margins in this 17-18% are the sustainable range going ahead?
Okay, Manish. Your question. I think I got the question. If I may respond to it at two levels. First of all, as you're aware, we do not give a guidance on margins, so it won't be possible for us to hazard a guess on what the margin could be in the future. Equally, I think it's important for us to state and underline that we have a lot of focus on driving operating efficiencies, managing the costs, containing inflation, you know, extracting productivities. So those work streams are very much in play right now. Even as we expand and we get operating leverage, where the balance will lie in the future between cost pressures owing to inflation, etc., operating leverage owing to growth and productivity that we drive in the business, I cannot tell, but we are focused on driving profitable growth.
Okay, fine, thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Anuj Gupta from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, sir. So, some newspaper headlines suggested that Jubilant is trying to trying out a Chinese fast food line. So could you please throw some light on this news? And also if you could share your long-term vision to bring other global QSR brands to India or start a new QSR brand in-house. And my second question would be, what is the current market share of Domino's in pizza category? And plus, and how many further cities can we expand it to? And what will be the revenue percentage from in-dining and online delivery orders from our own app?
Okay, so there are four questions. Let me try and take them on. The first one, you are referring to media articles that emerged about a Chinese foray. Without referring to and responding to market speculation, I think a couple of things that I think want to state, that Chinese is the second largest cuisine in the Indian market after North Indian. So for us as a food business, it's an exciting area for us to evaluate. Number two, we have experiments going on to look at different kinds of cuisines. Chinese certainly is one of them. And we've got test kitchens going where we are looking at different kinds of Chinese food. We do not have a specific plan yet of getting into the market, but we will come back to you as soon as we have something specific and concrete to share. So that's the first question. Your second question was about Domino's market share. As you're aware, there is no syndicated study available which gives market share across channels, but we believe our market share in the pizza category remains at a robust 70%. Number three, how many cities can we expand to? We believe that Domino's as a brand and the business has relevance across many, many more cities. We don't have a number to that, but the number is very large. We can go to many, many more cities and many, many more locations because we see the demand for us being far more widespread than where we are right now. As a straw in the wind, as an indicator, validate that, a small town growth is very, very robust, through all the quarters of this year. It remains very strong. So we believe that the opportunity of expansion remains very compelling and very strong, and we're excited by it. Your fourth part of the question was about, our contribution, both sales and orders of our own platform. We do not divulge that number, as you're aware, but you can be sure that our platforms and our own organic assets, our own assets, are very big drivers of growth for us and will be investment areas for us going forward.
Basically in this I wanted to understand what is the percentage of revenue that you are getting from your own application orders and the food aggregators?
Right, Anuj. You know, I understood the question, and as I said, we do not share those numbers, but our assets and our own channels contribute to the majority or dominant share of our total business.
Okay. And so one last question that I asked was about any global brands that you're planning to bring into India or opening up a new brand itself in India.
Anuj, can you repeat the question, please? It wasn't very clear.
So the last question was, are you planning to bring any global QSR brand to India or start a new QSR brand in-house?
So, Anuj, we keep looking at growth opportunities of different kinds. You asked me the same question in the context of Chinese a little while back. So, yes, we keep looking at ongoing opportunities, whether it's looking at brands from outside or building our own brand. There's nothing specific on the anvil right now, but we shall circle back to you as soon as we have something concrete.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ashit Desai from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Pratik, thanks for taking my question. My question is again on the expansion. Since we are not giving any guidance on the expansion rate, but looking at this quarter's expansion, and it seems that the pace has gone up quite a lot. So just wanted to know, I mean, historically when we've had very large expansion rate, we were adding around 150 stores on a base of 700-800. It did impact our SSG and profitability. So as per you, what is the comfortable level of expansion rate that you would look at?
So Ashit, I think it's important to understand and for us to reiterate the context for the store expansion. And Mr. Bhatia called it out in his remarks as well. We are opening stores in two kinds of contexts. The first one is in existing store areas where on account of the significant order growth that we've had in the last couple of years, we see a pressure on existing stores in delivering to customers with consistent service levels. That allows us to start a new store of a reasonably strong base and therefore improve customer service to both in the old store, in the mother store, as also in the new store area. So that's one kind of area where we see stores opening. The other area is, new suburb areas, suburban markets in towns, where because of the growth of these urban markets and the sprawl, we have a vacuum and we have an opportunity. So that's the other area where we see an opportunity. And the third is, of course, new markets. And as I mentioned, we opened two new cities in the quarter just gone by. And there are many more cities where we can expand. So in all of these contexts, the encouraging part that we are seeing is that as we are opening stores in response to these stimuli and these contexts, we are seeing both the mother store and the new store do significantly well. We are not seeing any material impact on margins of a store expansion. And going back to your question of the pace of comfort, we have delivered this the pace last quarter because we are comfortable with that. So this pace is what we are comfortable with, and I don't have a number for you for the future, but our store expansion efforts that we are seeing right now and the performance is very, very encouraging.
Okay. So if I look at current expansion, it's around 6-7%, and broadly at that expansion, your SSG should not be affected by more than 2-3%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just on my second question is on the cost inflation. You had a favorable impact of commodity prices, but does this quarter also have a impact of higher crude prices, and which have come off now?
Crude. Okay. Sorry, I missed that question. Sorry, Ashish. No. So yes, we've had a benign commodity environment, like we talked about earlier. There has been some impact on account of crude increase, but that's a very marginal impact. It's not a material impact in the larger scheme of things.
Thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nishit Rathi from CWC Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thanks for this opportunity. Just wanted a couple of questions. One was, is it fair to say that Dunkin model has finally been fixed to some extent, and with the data that we possess with respect to Domino's and other learnings that we've had about Dunkin over the last couple of years, we could expect at least we can expect Dunkin to scale up significantly? This is the first question. Second is with respect to your cash deployment, right? The amount of cash that we're generating every year, every quarter, if for some reason we decide not to expand stores very aggressively, then we will be sitting with a significant pile of cash, right? And would love to get the cash number at the end of this quarter. This question, and just one follow-up would be the e-commerce policy which just recently got announced. Does it also apply to the food aggregators with respect to discounting? Would love your thoughts on that.
Got it. So I'll answer the first and the third question and request Prakashji to add and fill in the second part of the question. I think in response to your question about Dunkin and is it fixed, like you said, I think what really encourages us about Dunkin' Donuts performance is that it came on the back of a very strong growth as also very disciplined cost management. And the growth was delivered by the core portfolio of donuts and beverages as also a recovery in growth on the food platform. So it was a very strong growth-led performance apart from, of course, disciplined cost management. So that gives us confidence about Dunkin'. However, it is only break-even right now, and we obviously need to drive a profitable portfolio out of Dunkin. So as I said in response to a question earlier, we will watch Dunkin for some more time and then take a call on the pace of expansion and how we scale it up. That's the first question. Your third question was about e-commerce policy and the recent press note that was issued. I think it is fairly clear and straightforward and unambiguous that the press note applies to e-commerce entities engaged in the business of selling goods and services, and therefore we believe that the food aggregators are covered under the ambit of this policy.
Yeah. So, Pratik, just one follow-up on that. So all kind of discounting that's going on, where they're using their own funds, it'll be much harder for them to do that from Feb 1st going forward, right?
I guess they'll have to figure out and understand the implications of this press note on their own actions, on discounting, etc., and other practices. But yes, if you look at the press note, it does pose some very clear guidelines and guardrails for e-commerce entities, and they'll have to comply with that.
And the Dunkin' break-even, when you say break-even, it is after absorbing the overheads, right? The corporate overheads.
That's right, Nishit. It's an EBITDA break-even post-corporate overheads.
Perfect. And the cash?
Yes,
so your other question was on the cash. So it's a happy situation to be in a situation where we are generating cash. So obviously we have published the balance sheet, so you can yourself calculate. So last quarter we have given the balance sheet. So the exact number keeps on fluctuating, but it would be in the range of 550 to 600. We keep on evaluating the expansion plans and all. So based on that, we decide that how to utilize this cash most efficiently.
And going back to the point that we, I think, been saying, and that's the recurring theme, that this market is growing and is growing rapidly. And as India's largest QSR player, we have strong expansion plans. And therefore, this cash corpus will help us drive aggressive expansion as well, aggressive growth as well.
I think that's the only, actually, that's the only point, and we as shareholders are actually really looking forward to a plan to that effect, you know, with 600 crores of cash in the balance sheet and you generating close to 150 to 200 crores because your OCF is almost close to 100% EBITDA, right? So with that kind of cash generation that is coming up, we are really excited to see if you are confident enough to kind of say that we can deploy this cash to get further growth and capture a lot more of this QSR pie. That's what we're trying to understand, actually.
We just saw, you know, the last three or four years, your operating cash flow has almost been twice profit, probably because of negative working capital and, you know, depreciation being added back. So we've just seen that the cash generation versus PAT is significantly higher.
Right. I just want to repeat what I said, that I think we are excited by the prospects and the growth potential of this category. And we are looking at ways of driving faster and profitable growth.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Mayur Katani from OHF Portfolio. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. Just two questions. What would be your dine-in and delivery percentage?
So, Mayur, the delivery dine-in contribution and the breakup is roughly equal. And that's what we said earlier as well, is roughly equal.
Okay. And would you look up at setting up a cloud kitchen kind of a concept to manage a delivery? Because so much of this is coming online. So, would you have that kind of thought in mind?
So, Mayur, the exciting part of our business is the model that we have, where we have a combination of dine-in and delivery in equal measure. It allows us to acquire new customers in both channels. It allows us to deliver a customer connect and experience in both channels differentially. And we see, therefore, a dine-in and takeaway as an integral part of our model going forward. We have seen that when we try to open very small stores, the dine-in business ends up being significant as well. So we do not see dine-in being divorced from our business model going forward.
Okay.
We may vary the store sizes depending on the context and the contours of growth, but we believe that dine-in is actually a source of terrific, of tremendous strength for our business model, and we don't intend to disaggregate that significantly.
Okay, great. And anything on the commissary expansion? I mean, you did one last year in Greater Noida. So with the growth now coming back and new stores coming up, would you look at any other expansion on the commissary side in the next 1 year or so?
Mayur, what we, I think when we invested in Greater Noida commissary last time, we mentioned that we were invested for driving significantly higher store expansion. As of now, our capacities are adequate for driving both same store growth and store expansion. But this is an area, as you can imagine, we keep looking at real time. And as soon as we feel the need to trigger capacity expansion, we will circle back and we'll make sure we invest in that.
Mr. Mayur Katani, requesting you to please rejoin the question queue for your follow-up. Thank you. Next question is from the line of Riken Kupani from Infina Finance. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to understand, firstly, you elaborated for the gross margin expansion. There was contribution from a richer mix of sales as well. If you could elaborate more and certain trends that you are witnessing that is helping in an improved mix in the portfolio for you?
Yeah. So, Nitesh, yes, as you mentioned, improvement in mix was one of the drivers of GM expansion. And specifically in this quarter, we did two of the things that helped us drive mix improvement. One was the promotion that we ran on cheeseburst crust, the chocolava cake. That helped us drive up cheeseburst and chocolava as well. We also introduced a new site, and the growth of that also helped us deliver a beneficial mix. So those are the two big drivers of mixed impact.
Understood. So these are more, initiatives that should continue to drive. What's your longer-term thought process on the improvement in mix? Also, you've launched four new sides and the new crust options. Broadly, if you could highlight the thought process on how these things should evolve for your gross margins in the slightly medium term.
So I will not be able to speculate on what the gross margin impact will be, but the larger point being that we will continue to drive mix improvement, driving premiumization, driving attachment of sites. Those are fundamental growth drivers for us, and we will keep doing that. It may happen through innovations like it did in last quarter partly. It can happen through promotions, tactical promotions like it happened partly last quarter. It'll happen through data mining, consumer insighting, and using the power of data to drive intelligent upselling and cross-selling. So we'll do all of those things that will help us drive a beneficial mix going forward.
Understood. And sir, just the second question is with regards to comment on growth outlook. So while there is some pressure which may come because of the splitting of stores, but given that still that may be a small proportion, otherwise we are still outlining that the end consumer demand trend continues to be robust with our category. Would that be a correct assumption?
No, that would be an absolutely correct statement, Nitesh. I think we are seeing our growth being driven by orders. We are seeing growth being driven by delivery. We are seeing our growth being driven by online channels, by all pop data towns, but especially smaller towns. We are seeing growth come on the back of core pizzas, and we are seeing therefore that the demand momentum continuing.
And so just one last thing I wanted to put in. With regards to attrition and how are you seeing the, which you called out last quarter regarding the employee cost, how are these two elements panning out for you now and where do you see those?
Mitesh, we are happy with the way we managed our manpower and the manpower cost in quarter three. They were broadly... three big themes that we drove. The first one was we used technology to drive an improvement in our delivery efficiencies. I referred to my opening remarks of deploying rider GPS functionality across all our riders, all our stores, and that helped us drive an improvement in delivery efficiencies. So that was the first one. The second one was we had a very focused and a very concerted and a broad-based hiring effort where we expanded the prospective talent pool that we went to and improved and strengthened our hiring efforts. We also had, the third point, better retention of our existing manpower through highlighting of the Domino's EVP, underscoring that, making sure that our employees knew, our team members knew that they had a future at Domino's, beyond just being delivery boys. So all of these three put together helped us manage and contain the manpower cost last quarter. We believe that the worst in terms of challenge on manpower cost is behind us, and we do not expect to see any major challenges on manpower cost going forward.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Chinchan Khandelwal from Birla Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and congrats on good set of numbers. My question was on the employee cost, which you have answered mostly. But just to understand the cost of a delivery boy, so today you have the entire delivery boy which you have is in your payroll. How do you manage that? And with the food aggregator paying them high and even the e-commerce website looking to hire and get more employees, this cost item you usually will not go up. I heard that, but I'm just trying to understand how much you pay them and what's the annual inflation we can project here.
Yeah. So, Sanchit, going back to the first part of your question, all our delivery staff and all indeed our store staff, they are employed on the payroll. They are our employees. They have access to all the benefits that a normal employee has. While we saw some pressure and we called it out in the last quarter, this quarter's performance that you've just seen and what I just talked about should tell you that between driving efficiencies, increasing our talent acquisition efforts and hiring efforts and going to a broader talent base and ensuring that we contain attrition, we believe that we've got the right algorithm now put together to manage our manpower, to both support our growth and to manage that within within the cost guardrails.
And the second part is how much annual inflation would you can do in this project here?
The inflation will happen to the extent of minimum wage inflation happening from state to state. And we had inflation during this quarter which hit us. And as you see in the numbers, we were able to contain that and manage that by driving productivity and driving efficiencies.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sandeep Samani from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. Just want to ask one question on promoter pledging. It is almost like 18.4%. I want to check what is the thought process around it. Do we expect it to go up or probably go down in future?
No, there is no... we only expect it to go down. There is no reason for it to go up.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sunil Vora from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is Kunal Vora. Wanted to get your thoughts on region-specific menu as well as regional pricing. And how's the response been to going pure veg in Gujarat?
Your first part of the question, can you just repeat that, please?
I wanted to hear your thoughts on region-specific menu as well as regional pricing, like, say, in different cities, different menu, some changes in the menu, as well as different pricing in different cities. What are your thoughts on that?
So as of now, Kunal, as you're aware, we have for the small towns a super value menu that has been in play for the last year and a half, and that is helping us drive growth. We are open to looking at innovations and tapping into regional palate differences and preferences. And using that as a lever for innovation. As soon as we have something specific, you will see. But that remains, I called out as one of the first, one of the first of the five pillars was innovation and product. So this would be part of that theme. India is a very complex and a very diverse market from a palate and taste point of view. And we keep looking at these opportunities and see if we can customize the menu by region, etc. Going back to the second part of your question about Gujarat, we went live with 100% veg in Gujarat in week 1 of October. And the context for that, just to recap, was that non-veg was a very small part of the mix in Gujarat. And also all our consumer data showed that having non-veg was a barrier to growth, both for prospective new customers as also for driving frequency. It's now been in the market for over 3 months and pretty much the whole quarter last quarter. What we saw was a significant increase in new customers acquisition and new users addition in Gujarat compared to the pace before this. We also have seen existing customer numbers increasing and the frequency increasing. I think what really encouraged us was this translated into Gujarat being one of our faster growing markets in quarter three last quarter basically. In addition, and we keep hearing and talking to customers both in the stores and through our customer sat measurement systems, the anecdotal feedback and the feedback from customers in the stores has been very, very positive.
Sure. Second one, sir, can you share your thoughts on the growth of food delivery market? Like, we are seeing strong growth both for food aggregators as well as for your own online ordering. Are you seeing some changes in customer behavior? Is it discounting? What's really driving this massive expansion in the food delivery market?
I think if I can dissect the growth of food delivery into two parts, the first part is the democratic, sustainable growth that's happening on account of larger factors which are driving this growth. The need for enhanced convenience, the increase in the number of working women that you see now in the workforce. Number three, greater traffic and more congestion in the urban market. Working couples, going back to my second point. So all of these are very, very fundamental and long-term drivers of the growth of delivery and the need thereof. This is being superimposed with deep discounting that is acting as a growth accelerator. But we believe that deep discounting can never be a sustainable way of building a market. It can drive short-term growth. But what will drive long-term growth will be the fundamental enablers of that behavior. So we are excited because we see the fundamental market being enabled in delivery on account of these larger macro factors.
Sure. My only question was, like, fundamental factors have always existed. Like, many of the earlier factors which you mentioned have already have been around. But still, last 2 years, the market has really exploded. So, is it mobile phone, like data penetration, is it discounting? What do you think are the drivers in the last 2 years?
I think if I won't keep discounting out of it, going back to the point about sustainable growth drivers, I think the fact that technology is becoming much more ubiquitous, there are smartphones, there's people having access to apps, and the convenience being given from the food ordering, food tech players, and the variety of cuisine, all of that is encouraging customer experimentation and customer ordering. So that certainly is one of the fundamental growth drivers, apart from discounting, which we believe is not sustainable. But that is, of course, adding to short-term growth.
Thank you, Mr. Vora. Requesting you to please rejoin the question queue for your follow-up. Next question is from the line of Sanjay Singh from Pine Bridge Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Prateek. Congrats on a good set of numbers. The dine-in, you mentioned that 50-50 dine-in to delivery. Will it be by value or will it be a number of orders?
Sanjay, that's the value contribution between delivery and dine-in.
And will it be fair to say that delivery order value will be more than dine-in?
We have not, I mean, we haven't shared those numbers.
Will it be more?
I think what we have shared,
will it be more? Hello?
The order, the value contribution. So the contribution is 50-50, and the ticket size in Delhi tends to be larger because you have groups and your families ordering. Beyond that, we won't be able to share any more numbers.
No issues. And how would it have changed in the last maybe 2-3 years? Would it be same or would it be increased in favor of delivery?
We've been saying this, Sanjay, in the last few calls that our growth has been more delivery biased. So the mix has moved a little bit in favor of delivery over the last few quarters.
Okay. And would it be able to share what would be the average delivery time currently?
No, I'm afraid we don't do that, Sanjay. You're aware of our delivery promise of 30 minutes. I think we are doing a reasonably good job of delivering to that promise. In fact, faster than that. We have not shared specific numbers and operations KPIs, and we won't be starting doing that now. But I think we are doing very well on delivering to our customer satisfaction levels and within the timelines that we promised.
And delivery time would be more or less constant in the last few years, or you would have changed in either ways? Especially the directionally, not the time per se. Would it be the same?
I think improving our operations KPIs is an ongoing effort, and we called out earlier in this call. One of the reasons for doing the store split is to make sure we sustain the KPIs and the KPI improvement. So this is an area of constant focus for us, and it becomes very important that we deliver to our customers' expectations within the timelines, even as the load on the stores increase and even as we have more stores. So that remains an ongoing effort, and that has been an area of focus for the last many years. It's not just now.
And lastly, on the delivery boy thing, delivery payment, is it now some way shifting to a per delivery payment, or is it still a salary based more? Are you experimenting with the per delivery payments?
So we've tried a variety of models, Sanjay. We have a combination of full timers in the stores, part timers in the stores, and we've also experimented with pay per delivery. And this is a dynamic balance that we keep trying, depending on delivery efficiencies and the cost of delivery. But we believe, based on our learnings in the last quarter, that we are at a good place in the mix that we have between various kinds of manpower.
Okay. And lastly, on the delivery thing, is you know, the utilization of a delivery, let's say a full-time delivery employee, for you would be significantly different from that of a food aggregator, or it will be more or less similar?
I think the advantage that we have, Sanjay, also is that our delivery staff tends to be, and we increasingly look at multi-skilling them. So we also end up having them deployed inside the store when the pressure on orders is less or when the orders aren't there. So that's the advantage of having full-timers. They're, of course, appropriately trained. They're, you know, they have the right skill sets. But that said, driving delivery efficiencies, both among paper delivery staff, our part-timers and our paper delivery staff, is a very, very important priority for us. And as I mentioned earlier in the call, the fact that all riders now have GPS on their smartphones will allow us to have a very specific information on efficiencies and thereby improve them further.
Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Trupti Agarwal from White Oak Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for this opportunity. And a lot has been spoken about the delivery and the dine-in model. I just have one small question. I would like to know what are the trends in the non-metro or, let's say, the smaller cities with respect to dine-in versus delivery preferences? How's the growth in the, you know, delivery been in, let's say, outside the metros? Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So, Trupti, historically, and I'm talking of 2-3 years back, we are seeing the smaller towns being led a lot more by dine-in and not as much by delivery. I think the very encouraging part of the growth contours this time is that even the small towns are seeing a strong growth in delivery, as also in dining, but delivery is growing very, very strongly in small towns as well. And that points to the indicators we talked about earlier, the macros also impacting these small towns and the enhanced need for convenience. So what we are seeing is delivery as a market growing in small towns as well.
Sure. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Manoj Gori from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. So a couple of things. One would be on the employee cost. So if you look at during the current quarter, we have added approximately 35 stores. And also being it one of the strongest quarter, so we do hire more part-timers also during the December month. So despite doing this, our employee cost on QOQ basis has increased only by 7 crores. So just want to understand, especially when we do agree that the worst is over, but just want to understand behind this.
There are four themes as far as the personnel cost and manpower costs are concerned. The first one, Q1Q, of course, as you can imagine, was impact of volume increase. That led to a cost pressure as we hired more people to service the enhanced volumes. There was an inflation impact on account of minimum wages being rolled out in a few states, especially in the Northeast. That impacted our cost upwards. This was mitigated by two things. One was improvement in employee productivity, which we called out a couple of times in the call earlier. I think optimization of a fixed cost as well in manpower, and of course operating leverage. So those were the three countervailing factors which helped us mitigate the impact of volume increase and inflation.
Okay, sir. So secondly, on the revenue front, so if you look at 14.6% SSG for Domino's with strong performance coming from the Dunkin' Donuts as well. So if we do some kind of backward calculation, what I understand that the revenues like from the newer stores, which are not considered under your same store sales stores, were impacted during the quarter. Was it something to do with the timing of the store openings, or can you throw some more light on this?
So, yes, Manoj, I mean, the difference between what you see as same-store growth and what you see as overall system growth is a function of largely store expansion and the timing thereof. There is also some noise on account of Dunkin', where we had higher stores same time last year, we have fewer stores now. But yes, it is largely driven by the timing of store expansion.
So we are
so was it in the means in the in, during the last 30 days or 45 days so that the full impact has not been captured, which should come in from the Q4 onwards?
As I mentioned, Manoj, earlier, that the store opening was distributed through the quarter. So we had some stores opening in October, some in November, and some in December as well. So yes, to the extent that some stores opened in towards the end of the quarter, you haven't seen yet the full impact of those stores play out in the quarter.
So
just a combination of all kinds of...
Yeah, sorry, sir.
Thank you, Manoj.
Yeah, so sir, just one more thing. Can you give some indication, like if you look...
Hello. Hi, is the call on?
Yes, sir. So we've just lost the line for the participant. We move on to the next caller. It's from the line of Raj Mohan, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the call and congratulations on the robust numbers and the exciting store additions. On expansions, Domino's US in their investor day 10 days back indicated incremental store growth in the BRIC nations would be 3,500 plus stores by 2025. Based on our dynamics, where we are miles ahead of the other three big nations in the Domino's platform, would it be realistic to expect an excess of 1,000 store additions from India by 2025, also being validated by the accelerated store additions in the recent past? And in this context, could we expect the new store additions to contribute materially to sales growth from FY20?
Thank you, Raj Mohan. As we said earlier, we are excited about the momentum that we have in the Domino's business. We're excited about the way the growth has been delivered. It's growth that's order-based. It's growth that is democratic across towns, across pop strata. It is both in delivery and dine-in, but a lot more in delivery. So we remain very excited about the prospects for expanding the store network in Domino's. We see three kinds of opportunities. One is, given the growth in the large towns and especially in metros, we feel that there's opportunity for us to open more stores, both to relieve the pressure on existing stores as also to tap into new micro markets as they're emerging in these towns. That's number one. Number two, we see the need clearly to go to new towns, and we opened two last quarter, but many, many more that we can go to. We also see room for opening up stores in new channels, whether it is corporate parks, whether it's college campuses, travel and transport channels. So yes, there is opportunity for expanding our footprint across all of these areas. We won't be able to put out a number in terms of what that count would be, but we believe this market has got tremendous potential and tremendous depth, and we're excited by it.
Okay, and as I asked, could you expect the new store additions to contribute materially to sales growth by, say, FY20 or later?
It would be fair to say that as we expand our store network and as the full impact of the stores we've added this year plays out, you will see an increase or delta between same-store growth and the total system growth expand. So, yes, the new stores will contribute more to overall top-line expansion going forward.
Okay. Any break-even assessments you would objectively give on the new stores in the form of period fall in generating, say, unit-level positive cash flows in split stores as well as new stores? Also, is there further room for driving operational efficiencies in the existing stores?
So, Rajmohan, there will always be room for driving operational efficiencies, and that's the work that we never tell ourselves is finished at WIP. It has to remain so going forward, number one. Number two, the new stores that we open profitably, open strong, and they build from there. Our paybacks, we've said in the past, are in the region of 3 years. We have seen in the recent past some of the better stores are having a faster payback than that as well. And of course, there is a hugely, I think, a beneficial impact on customer satisfaction and improved operational KPIs. So it is a win-win in that sense. As we open more stores, we get more revenue, we get more customers, and we get happier customers.
Hello.
Thank you. Request Mr. Rajmohan to please rejoin the question queue for your follow-up. We take the next question from the line of Pulkit Singhal from Motilal Oswal Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So, firstly, the first one is on the railway station kind of opportunity. If you could just share in terms of the sales per store which you are currently observing on those stations, is it much higher than what you have overall, or is it still long way to go to reach there? And to that extent, how many stations could you kind of expand this opportunity to?
So, Pulkit, we are seeing a very encouraging response to our railway ordering proposition. As I mentioned earlier, we are seeing a significant increase in orders and in revenues over the last quarter. As you're aware, we rolled out a TV ad towards the end of quarter two, early quarter three, talking about the railway ordering functionality. That has also driven awareness and trials. We also are seeing very good customer satisfaction levels on railway ordering. We are seeing a very positive social media impact whenever we deliver and into trains and make customers happy. Typically, this leads to repeat orders. We have seen repeat orders come faster because customers are happier. So that said, we believe this is still the start. We have a long, long way to go. The railway market is very large, and we've barely scratched the surface of it. So we see this being an engine of growth for us in the future as well.
Right. So how many stations would you be currently serving?
We cover close to 160 stations right now.
Okay. And these would be like your stores at each of those stations. You would need to have a store at each of the stations to serve this.
Yeah, we have a store proximate to the station, not necessarily in it, mostly in fact not in it, but close to the station. And we have people who are, runners from the store to the station, depending on the order flow.
Right. Second question, particularly when you dissect the growth in terms of new customers versus higher frequency from existing customers, particularly in the last 1 year, are you seeing a higher growth in new customers?
Pulkit, I think I talked about what encourages us when we see the growth profile. Excuse me. One of the things that encourages us also is that we are attracting more new customers and also growing frequency of existing customers. So in the last quarter, we saw an increase and a growth in addition of new customers to a franchise. We also saw an increase in the frequency of our core customers, telling us that the proposition that we have between the product and the value and the customer experience that we provide is working both for new customers and to attract them, as also for existing customers.
I'm sure growth is coming on both aspects. It's just that in the last, I think, 6-8 months, the number of mobile app downloads are a lot higher. And also, I'm just trying to evaluate whether this food aggregator market is bringing new customers to you. So is there reason to believe that this new customer growth could be much faster, would have been much faster than what you've witnessed previously?
So there is certainly the impact of technology and greater access driving new customer acquisition. But what you see in our Polo is also a movement, a channel migration from voice to online. That is also sitting in the numbers that you see there. But both our own efforts, our own organic platforms, our assets, and our marketing advertising support initiatives are helping drive new customer acquisition. As also is access to more smartphones, more technology, etc.
Okay. So lastly, I mean, when you evaluate all these new opportunities for, in terms of Chinese or other cuisines, I mean, will you be able to use your existing network of Domino's, or will you have to do this completely separately, if at all, under a new umbrella?
I think right now that question is a little hypothetical, Pulkit. The one, certainly, as we see it, the one strength that we can leverage in our expansion, as we are indeed doing in Dunkin' right now, is a network of commissaries that we have across the country. They will be common and shared assets.
Beyond that, we'll have to see how that plays out. But the commissary network will be a source of strength for us.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nilesha from MS. Please go ahead.
Thank you. My first question is on the SSG. You highlighted that more than 50% of the stores are in existing cities and hence expect some pressure on the same store sales growth. But the question really is that, we are talking about a very tiny fraction of the stores on a base of what is 1,200 plus stores. So why was there a need to call this out? I'm not quite certain about it, because mathematically it can have a very tiny impact on the same store sales growth.
I think Nilay, it's important for us to call it out because the stores that we opened, those 50% plus store splits that we did, are for reasons of the store load being high. So these are our high revenue, high order growth stores. And that is going to have some impact, albeit marginal. But it's important for you as a priority to know that what's driving store expansion is not just opening up a new market, but also the need for us to split existing markets to service customers better.
Okay, clear. But I think the second question is on the press note clarification that you gave on the e-commerce press note. Have you sought any clarifications from the government or got a legal opinion on this to suggest that these would be included, the food aggregators would be included in this particular clarification that has come through?
Nilay, I think the assessment that we have internally of the press note is very clear. I think there is no ambiguity in that. And if you read the press note, the clauses that have been put down there are fairly straightforward. So we have absolutely no doubt that food aggregators would be covered under the purview of the press note.
Okay, clear. And the final question is on the OLO numbers which you give in your presentation and the mobile ordering as a percentage of OLO. Would that be for the Domino's app per se or for all the online ordering orders which you get?
Nilay, this is for Domino's.
This is only for Domino's. Okay, very clear. So thank you very much.
Thank you. We take the next question from the line of Bhavesh from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. This is Vivek. I mean, a lot has been asked about store splitting. I also have, carrying forward from the earlier question, if store splitting has a small impact on SSG, mathematically speaking, it should also have an impact on margins because the existing store revenues go down and it's a very, fixed cost intensive model. Why do you say that there is no impact on margins? Something I'm not very clear about.
So Vivek, we are talking based on our experience from the third quarter and the performance and what we see as, the impact of new stores, both on top line and on margins. Our new stores have opened strong, so that we opened both last quarter and earlier in the year. The new stores have opened strong. The old stores have gone back in under 12 months to the original trajectory and growth and sales. And therefore, the combined stores are showing a healthy increase in both sales and overall profits. And we don't expect the same store, the store opening in the future, to impact materially the margins adversely.
Okay, and one more thing on store splitting. When your own store, or let's say competition, when your own store, kind of cannibalizes an existing one, with so much, let's say $1 billion raised by Swiggy, and talks of Zomato also raising $1 billion. When your own store can create a bit of a competitive pressure, or let's say cannibalization, why does that worry you when food aggregators are raising, let's say $1 billion number, when you come across these things? I mean, and my question is purely from a short-term perspective. Long-term, I concur with your view that, market will expand, etc., but from a short-term perspective.
Vivek, on that, there is no ambiguity. Whether it is the long-term or the short-term, our primary purpose as Domino's is to ensure we delight and satisfy our customers. If we see, and wherever we see, that the pressure on existing stores is coming in the way of delivering a superior customer experience, it is incumbent upon us to make sure we split the store and go back to giving customers the experience that we give them normally. So that is an absolute area of focus, regardless of what the static in the environment is, regardless of what you hear other food tech players do, what capital they raise or not. Our focus is to on our customers and in delighting them. And that's going to remain an area of concerted focus for us, regardless.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ankit Sethi from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, this is Rohit Desai from Kotak. I had a couple of questions, please. Pratik, you are almost a company obsessed with CSAT scores, as it comes across in a lot of your comments. Now, my question is on, you know, whether you measure this internally, do you do some external NPS studies? And if so, what are the trends therein? Not so much the absolute numbers, but have you seen an improving trend?
Thank you, Rohit. Yes, we absolutely have NPS, the Net Promoter Score, as a measurement system that we use. And we track it very closely. We track it at the store level. We track it at the aggregated level at various cuts. We track it, you know, whether it's weekdays or weekends. So we have a lot of science and a lot of rigor which goes into tracking the customer satisfaction scores. I think it's what encourages us is that we have seen progressively over the last few quarters our customer sat scores improve across both delivery and dining.
Excellent. My second question is a little more micro in nature. If you're talking about, you know, these stores which are peaked out in terms of your ability to deliver from a volume standpoint, how should we think about per store capacity? What is the bottleneck there? Are you unable to expand, you know, your ovens? I mean, is it lack of space? Is it just inability to expand the delivery manpower? I mean, what is the bottleneck? And how many, I mean, over time, does this pose pressure on your ability to deliver SSG? Just the physical constraints of space in a store.
So, Rohit, whenever we feel a pressure in the store, given the order growth, the first attempt, of course, is to de-bottleneck the existing store by putting in more infrastructure, by putting in more riders, putting in more manpower to make sure that we're able to deliver to the increased order load from the same store. So that is, of course, the first attempt that we do. Only when we realize that after adding more ovens, after adding more riders outside the store, after de-bottlenecking the kitchen itself, we are not able to service the load, it is only then do we split the store. So a lot of the stores that we see in our smaller towns are right now not getting split despite having very high delivery growth and order growth, because there is enough room for us to extract growth from the same store, partly by adding infrastructure, partly by improving the kitchen flow, partly by improving training, partly by having more infra and more riders outside the store. It's only when that becomes difficult, then we move to splitting the stores.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Krishna Sambamurthy from Motilal Oswal Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, most of my questions have been answered. Just one query on the payback period. I know you're not added a lot of stores. On the payback period?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I know you've not added a lot of stores over the last year and a half, but even with the stores that you've added, given the momentum that's continuing in terms of QSR, your own initiatives as well as delivery, have you seen a reduction in the payback period compared to the past?
Krishna, yes. Answer is very clearly yes. We have seen an improvement in the payback period, you know, in the stores opened more recently.
Okay. And how significant is that? Can you quantify that number? The earlier we used to get data on the payback period, has there been a material increase?
Earlier, we used to say that our break-even was, the payback period was 3 years. It had slipped to a little later than that when we had challenged SSG. Now, our payback period has improved to a little under 3 years, faster than 3 years.
Okay. And can you call out what's the escalation in terms of per-store lease rentals that you're witnessing now?
You're seeing the impact of a variety of these factors into the rent cost line. There is, of course, some inflation that we are seeing play out. There's also an impact of volume growth and revenue growth, wherever we have rentals tied to revenue. And then there's, of course, some impact of productivity that we have. and closed stores wherever we've shut them. Vis-a-vis same time last year, of course, there's also the impact of input credit loss that's sitting out there.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management for their closing comments.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the call today. I'm hopeful that you were able to answer and address all your queries. Should you feel the need for any clarifications, any further questions, please feel free to reach out to us or to CDR India. Before concluding, let me once again reiterate that we are happy with the performance in quarter three. We are confident of sustaining the momentum and delivering profitable growth going forward. Thank you once again and have a good evening.